Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And you hear that sound? That's the sound of other grassroots podcasters thinking, shall we bother doing an episode now? 2024 is here. We're here for you 52 weeks of the year, and this is our 11th season and 12th calendar year in which we have broadcast to you. And if you appreciate that fact, you can show that appreciation just by hitting subscribe wherever you get your podcast, or by getting more at patreon.com/eggchasers, where you can help keep the lights on and find extra and quite often extra spicy content as well. I'm here in the rugby dungeon with JB.
Hello, Tim.
There we go. Normal service resumed. JB, I got to his house and he'd just woken up, possibly after a groggy evening at some point this weekend.
Yeah.
And he's got no socks or shoes on, ready for OnlyFans.
I spent most of my weekend just in a pair of shorts, wandering around the house. I've got the house myself the whole week. This is how you should be, really.
The shorts could have been optional if it's just you in your house.
But absolutely.
Yeah, why not? And Phil.
Hello, Tim.
How are you doing?
Not bad. Good. Not bad, thank you very much.
Are you ready for tomorrow and like normality and all the rush hour traffic, schools and all that jazz?
Well, I was back in work last week, but you're right, there was no rush hour. Yeah. Trains were very quiet. Roads were quiet. Can't wait. Can't wait to get back to it.
All right, well, hopefully this is providing a little bit of a respite from all of that. And we've got lots to talk about on this week's podcast. Loads of great rugby in the Premiership, in the top 14 in the URC. Oh, no, not in the URC, but we got to the URC clubs will be back in action because it's European Cup fortnight the next 2 weeks. And there's plenty of other stories going on in rugby besides. And I reckon we'll let's knock this one on the head then. Start this on Thursday night and then more on Friday and then a bit more yesterday. All the talk was about Owen Farrell going to Racing 92. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think it has to happen. That's what I think. I think it has to happen. I think England don't need him anymore. I mean, they do need him. Look, if he's available, then they need him. He's not available, they don't need him. Right, so England stuff out the window. I've thought long and hard about Saracens and we'll talk a bit more about them later on in the podcast, but I think they are pretty much done. As a force, they're on the decline now and they're going to have a real large think about what they do with this squad and maybe ripping off the plaster with Owen Farrell as the way forward. And from Owen Farrell's point of view, he's given, like him or loathe him, and sometimes I've done both, he has put in a monumental shift.
15 years.
For England and for Saracens, mm-hmm. And I think he should have a change. You know, there is something beautiful about being a one-club man and all the rest of it. But why not go to France? Why not go to Paris and play a bit of rugby there? So I think he should go. I really do.
He's going to... If it happens, which... I don't know. I think the evidence is pointing towards the fact that... Well, an offer has been made because Racing did not deny having made an offer. They just denied an agreement.
An agreement, yes.
And Saracens have, straight batted it. So I think it's the odds are on that this is happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, or certainly... Because it may be... There's an offer on the table, and Farrell himself has not made the decision yet.
Yes.
But it looks like there is a very realistic and probably very lucrative offer on the table to prize him away from being the marquee player at Saracens and a couple of hundred K of guaranteed, if he chooses to, England money.
Are there marquee spots in French salary cap? I know their salary cap is something like 11.5 million euro.
I don't think there is. And if there is,
I remember looking a few years ago, so exactly how it worked, but I can't recall if they're marquee.
Well, I think it's 11.5 euros is the player salary cap.
But they also, I seem to recall them having a looser regulation around the outside interest, the commercial deals and the IP. Because like in England, anything that, any money that you earn or anything that's given to you by the club or directly from the club or through the club.
Like image rights.
Image rights. So if your image, if you are, I don't know, so I can see a packet of Walker's crisps over there. If you're doing some advertising, some marketing for Walker's crisps and you happen to wear in a Saracens shirt, or you were put together through, say, Leicester and Walker's, that would count towards the salary cap.
Now I'm trying to think of trying to think of rugby players that could be crisp flavours, puns.
I mean, I can't remember the rules of it. It's like £20,000. I can't remember. There are very strict rules in the salary cap for how this works, and the image rights do something like, if you appear on a club promotion in your kit, you have to be one of five faces. It's things like that.
Mm, so it's not for the individual.
Yeah, so that's... So
there may be creative ways that players can get paid a lot of money in France and not necessarily take a massive dent to the salary cap.
It might not be creative. It just might be...
They're legit. Fully legit ways of...
It would be like it was back in the day when like, I don't know. I don't know if this actually happened, but... Like, for example, Leicester Tigers. Oh, Manu Tuilagi is doing a completely separate from his salary, nothing to do with his job at Leicester Tigers, but he's doing a day's consultancy at Caterpillar, who are paying him $300,000 for it.
Well, yeah. Maru Itoje, in the Saracens salary cap scandal, he was in the redacted version, which came out after the unredacted version. In the unredacted version, Maru Itoje, I think it was £90,000 to attend an event that neither he nor the organisation he allegedly attended, nor Saracens had any evidence that he actually attended.
So anyway, I'm actually with you, JB, and it did annoy me that headline from The Guardian after a really good game, which we can talk about, which Owen Farrell was not culpable for the defeat for Saracens at Welford Road whatsoever. What are you supposed to call it? It's not Welford Road, is it? It's Mattioli Woods Welford Road.
Yeah.
But he was not culpable for that at all. But whoever the Guardian headline writer wrote, Owen Farrell blunders cost Saracens. So, I kind of think, just go, Owen.
Yeah, he's so integral to Saracens that when they do lose, Owen Farrell does lose.
But I guess the point I'm making is he's not. For all of the talent he has, if he were South African or Irish or French or New Zealander, he would be revered.
I don't know.
He would.
I don't know.
He just would. Look at Johnny Sexton. Very similar character. Like, rubs some people up the wrong way, but Irish people love him.
And in England, you get the... this podcast is perhaps a microcosm of this. You get the Farrell lovers and
Farrell realists.
Yeah. Let's use that terminology. But you're right. In
Real Farrell teak, as I call it.
we could start, because we've probably done Farrell. I think I probably agree with just about everything you said, JB. Mm. I think it probably, even though he is so integral to Saracens, it probably will be a blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
Because they can think, rather than having to pay that money to Farrell or Itoje, one of their existing stars, who, to keep them there, would command a marquee rate. Because in France, they're worth best part of €1 million, 800,000, that kind of value. But it allows them to really think about what do they need. And judging by this week and some of the games this season, they need some front rowers. The penalty count against Saracens, for one thing, but the number of scrum penalties, and just even if it's not a scrum penalty, it's just poor quality ball. I don't know how they stayed in the game with that a scrum that was going back at that rate of knots.
Well, do you want to come back to that game? Because I'd like to start with Bath Gloucester just because it's fresh in my mind.
Yeah.
But I don't mind whatever you want to do.
No, totally. Let's come back to it. But I just want to touch on, I'm not wanting to start a whole long conversation, but it's worth pointing out, Courtney Laws, it looks like he might be going to Provence. In Pro D2.
Wow.
Okay.
Big money.
Well, yeah, also, what a lovely part of the world.
yeah.
With a young family, having spent a bit of time going around France,
Provence.
Aix-en-Provence is a gorgeous, gorgeous place.
It hasn't
happened yet, but they are the new front runners that have emerged.
Interesting.
I think Tommy Francis has gone there.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple of other boys have gone there. And maybe they're Pro D2, but looking to go up. So maybe they've just given him a nice long contract, a bit of certainty.
That's a minor Harrison's there.
And a bit of cash.
Ah, okay. That makes
Jimmy
sense.
Gopeth, according to this list, and Johnny McPhillips.
Yeah. So I don't know the whys and wherefores.
Well, we'll ask him on Friday.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And
are we going on Friday? Are you driving on Friday?
I don't think I can, because Claire is at a 40th.
Right.
So I think I'm struggling for Friday, unfortunately.
Okay. I'll let Northampton Saints down gently. That's fine.
Right. Leave it with me, because I really want to go to this. Okay.
And the other one was... Oh, yeah, I was just gonna say, we don't have to have a big discussion about it, but... The Owen Farrell thing did just make me think again, and particularly when I dovetail it with the fact that I saw an article where Pat Sanderson was saying, please, we shouldn't raise the salary cap in England to 6.4 million. You cannot have it every way. You cannot limit the amount of money that clubs spend on salaries and limit the potential earnings of players when they're at the peak of their earning power.
No, I don't want to say I told you so 5 years ago.
No, you did. You did. And I didn't totally disagree. I didn't really disagree then. But I don't like the cap rule. I think that's stupid because it doesn't account for some people that are in very competitive positions, late bloomers, that kind of thing. But I think if you've spent 7, 8 years, like Owen Farrell has, he spent more than that, grafting away, doing your work in the Premiership, then you should be allowed to go. Henry Arundel, so that would mean at Racing 92, if they're both there next year, Henry Arundel would not be eligible to play for England because he hasn't done the time served in the Premiership. Owen Farrell, who has. If the issue is trying to keep the Premiership a good product, then the people that have spent years doing that then deserve to go off and make whatever they want.
Well,
so that would be just one idea of
just
how
hold that thought, because that ties in nicely with another thing which came out this week, which was the advent of a brand new player agency to represent the England players.
Good point, yeah.
So
that dovetails nicely.
It depends on what you want to do and how strong this agency is going to be. It's called an agency, but my question is, what happens if the agency doesn't like the deal on the table? Does it then become a trade union? And I suspect it might do. And I think there's going to be some very, very strong and positive changes as a result of this.
Yeah, so you sent a voice note to us this week outlining what you think the potential implications of this may be for the RFU and wider, which I think I agree with. So
to summarise it, the England players at the elite end of the game have decided they no longer want to use the services of the RPA and instead have set up a company of which, among others, Ellis Genge, Anthony Watson and a number of other senior England players are now directors of this company that they have formed. I can't remember what the name of the company is, but they've formed it and it's going to represent the interests of the England players. So they will be sitting down and thrashing out deals with the RFU. One thing that they've now got money for that apparently the RFU were trying to hold on to is £400,000 because they got third place at the Rugby World Cup.
Righto. Yeah. So this is it. Okay, so this is brilliant. There was one paragraph, I think, in the Times, which really solidified my point of view on this. I'd already sort of thought it through, like ignoring what it was about, but this sort of solidified it. And it said, this is a major blow for the RPA, who will now have less money to fund activities around the women's game and something else, other rugby activities. And that's like, that is the paragraph that seals it for me. So yeah, they've set up a new commercial entity so they can do all their commercial deals with the RFU and represent themselves going forward with things like the professional game agreement and everything else. It's been set up by the England players, but I think it is headed by a guy who does the recruitment in Bath and used to be an agent. And I don't know exactly how he's... I don't think he's an agent anymore because he does recruitment at Bath. And I'm not sure if he can carry on recruiting at Bath and be in this role, but a guy called Rob Burgess. So I believe he's involved. I could be wrong, but I believe that's who will be the actual guy in charge of it. And there's somebody else as well on the agency side that will be doing that.
Who was the guy that was 2 years ago, or maybe even 3 years ago now, when Genge was talking about setting up the agency or the union, whatever it was?
Yeah, so that was called Player Epoch or something, or Epoch?
Yeah.
Yeah, who were unhappy about everyone's salaries getting cut 25%.
Yes.
Sort of coerced to...
Exactly.
Yeah, so that was Genge, that was Greg Bateman, there was a few other guys.
There was a third-party guy who God, I can't remember
and
his
then
name.
It sort of all went horribly wrong when, as I understand it, well, Carling wanted to get involved and, you know, then the politics took over. So I think this is a really healthy development. Now, I strongly believe that the England players are underpaid because the whole structure of English rugby depends upon Twickenham opening up. So Twickenham opens up, these players play whatever that stadium generates, plus the revenue from TV and Six Nations, that then goes and feeds the game. Mm-hmm. Now, very few other sports work like rugby. So, for instance, that money will need to power the grassroots game, because the RFU are both a professional organisation and a grassroots organisation and a governing body, all of those things combined. And then bits of the England men's money is taken away to fund things like the women's game and community projects and just things which, they sound worthy, but not if it's my money.
Well, equally, I don't disagree, but I'll also just flip it and play devil's advocate here. The England players are standing on the shoulders of giants in the sense that they are only there playing at Twickenham because the whole pyramid structure of rugby, which started from the ground up, exists.
It's a very tricky argument, isn't it? Because does the pyramid really do that? I don't think it does, actually. I think what the pyramid does for England is it provides them with fans. That is true.
I also mean in the last 150 years. They're standing on the very top, and they're very fortunate to be standing at the very tip of the pyramid of what has been built.
I mean, you might argue... Yeah, you might argue that actually it's been built through the efforts of private schools and the want of like the English upper classes and their militaristic tendencies to want a cohort of young men in the private schools to run an empire. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons why we play rugby and why the England team exists in the way it does and the structures which they do. But now, this new agency sounds a little bit more to me like the RPA. Not the RPA. The Players Association in American football. So in American football, they ask the owners to open up the books, and when they realise what the TV money is and what the commercial revenues are and everything else, they say, well, we want a percentage of that, please. And I think the England players are absolutely entitled to do this. And I think, even more importantly, they're entitled to do this at the expense of all the other things that England spend their money on. I really do. So, you know, they get paid $25,000 a game. People say that's absolutely great. You know, that's more than enough. But no, not if actually they're worth $30,000 or $40,000. That's what they should be paid. And I think when they open up the books, there's going to be some real hard conversations, because if England redo a TV deal and it's $100 million, they go, oh, okay, can we have 55% of, you know, $100 million? And they go, oh, well, you could do, but we've given a third of it away to CVC. That's going to have to be revisited, because if that organisation, which runs the players, says, well, we don't want to play, there is nothing. There's absolutely nothing. There's no money for the women. There's no money for the grassroots.
Well, that would be cutting off your nose to spite your face, though, wouldn't it? So there is a balancing act point where there's an amount that they're happy with and a split they're happy with that actually everyone. So everyone needs to feel in that situation like they're getting a good deal.
Yeah.
That amount could be, it could be multiples of the $25,000.
Yeah.
A game per person. Yeah. We ran through the reports and accounts for 2023. It was end 30th of June 2023, which came out about a month ago, give or take, maybe 6 weeks ago. And I've just got it in front of me now, so I'll just give you some figures. The RFU revenue in 2023, $221 million. The cost of sales as they budget, so I assume that is player costs plus opening Twickenham, plus any kind of marketing or direct stuff, is $44 million, and there's 73 overhead expenses. So the cost of the back of house team, the cost of upholding and maintaining Twickenham.
All the councillors having trips to Italy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That will stop. So that will stop.
So that leaves they call it profit before rugby investment of £103 million. Now that currently 99.4 million of that, leaving 4 million true profit, gets invested back into the game, goes back to the clubs, the professional clubs, back to the championship clubs.
Am I putting air quotes around the word invested?
Back to, yeah.
Spent.
It's not an investment. Yeah. It is categorically not. Maybe some of it you could badge
the odd 4G pitch getting put in.
Yes.
Not good investment.
That is an investment.
Yeah, that is. But a lot of it is not an investment. But that's £103 million That's the size of the prize that presumably this agency union will be negotiating for, a larger share of that. It could be millions or tens of millions legitimately, because if the players do, if they take this as far as some unions and organisations have taken in the last 6-12 months and legitimately withhold their services, that 220 million would fall off a cliff. Like, if they weren't to play a Six Nations, that could be 100 million costs.
Decimate England.
Yeah. So there could be massive additional opportunity for the players.
Again, this is where it's so opaque and I just cannot work out the RFUs, the money and stuff, because there's talk about huge losses coming down the road and do the RFU then go, well, come on then, you got to cough up. You want a bigger share? You now owe us 10% of our losses.
Well, no, because they're just saying you just pay us more. I mean, it's kind of like Bill Sweeney. So Bill Sweeney just says, well, do you want someone of this quality? Pay me more or move jobs.
So we've...
withhold my labour.
So we've not seen those reports with the potential forecasts of tens of millions of losses, but they do coincide with a 220 million investment into the women's game.
Yeah,
That could be another... I mean, that is a rugby investment in the same way that this...
And the Times highlighted this as the potential fallout. The more money for the players would mean less money going to the women's game.
Yeah, but they said it in respect to the RPA.
Oh, okay.
So the fees that the RPA lose from the England players being signed up to their services means they can't then look after women and got another rugby activity. It's like, so what? I mean, that's not what I'm paying for. You know, if I pay my agent directly, I'm not paying him in order to look after a female player.
To subsidise other people, whether it's a female player or a player who plays for Doncaster or Cambridge or any of the lower level.
Yeah, you wouldn't go. You weren't there at my contract thing. Yeah, I was. I took the money you pay me, and I was down at a different club sorting out a deal for someone else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So. Now we look at like the effect on the women's game potentially and on the grassroots game. They're actually positive. So grassroots game first and foremost, I think there's a horrible culture in grassroots rugby of dependency. Where are the RFU? Why aren't they sending the BMWs down? Where are the community coaches? Yeah, okay, you don't have them, but now I think you've learned your lesson. You don't entrust the success of your club with an organisation which is as bad at what it does as the RFU. So if you're just waiting for RFU handouts, eventually you're going to be burned because, well, they spent so frivolously that they had to cut every community coach. That was devastating, but it should never have been the case that they were dependent on community coaches in the first place.
What's the relationship between money that comes into a rugby club that's affiliated to the RFU and the money that goes to the RFU? Do clubs pay the RFU
money? Other than like subs or something, I don't think so. I think it's more the other way around.
RFU will give you some money depending support. On certain things.
Yeah, okay.
But then what the RFU are able to do, of course, when they've got you to dance to their tune by giving you money, is then demand that you do things like, oh, can you have 8 teams and put them all on the game management system or player management system database? And if you want some extra money, have a women's team. And if you want some extra money, have a mixed ability team. And you end up with rugby clubs that look like community centres. So from the club's point of view, they need to stand on their own 2 feet. And I think that's actually really positive because they'll have to engage with their membership again, and find out what the members want and start tailoring the service to them. Otherwise, they just won't succeed. And the ladies' game will be interesting because, well, it's the single greatest investment opportunity in sporting history. I know this because I was told by the RFU, and they would never lie. So if that's the case, they should be able to stand on their own 2 feet because that's the only healthy way that that competition can survive is if... is it Belinda Moore, who is the chairman of the Premier 15s, or if they can prove to us that it's commercially viable, well, please, by all means, go for it, and I wish you the best of luck. But I think the English players now demanding what they deserve is a really healthy outcome, because, frankly, I'd rather give every penny to the England players who put their body and their health on the line every game than any money to anyone else, because... They earned it. No one else earned it. They earned it.
So here's some interesting calculations. Very, very quick fag packet calculations that I've just done. So current England 23, or current England matchday squad is 23. 12 games a season on average. $25,000 a game, which it certainly was the old, and then it got reduced during COVID. I don't know if it's back up to the full, but
I think it's back up to the full.
Let's just say 23 players, 12 games a season, $25,000 a game. That's £7 million just in player fees. But the RFU makes $100 million before that rugby investment, air quotations, for that investment. So that's each player. You could increase each player's earnings 14 times per match, which would mean each player would get £360,000 per match if nothing was spent on the grassroots game, the women game, propping up stuff. If you only covered, and this is based on last year's reports and accounts, only covered players' expenses plus the overheads, plus the maintenance of Twickenham and all the rest of it, each player could get £360,000 a game, and the RFU would still break even. Or actually, in this scenario, they still get a £4 million profit.
Yeah.
So that would be, if I was sitting on the players' agency, the first line of argument would be, that's what we want. That's the size of the prize.
Yeah. Now, there is a downside to this, of course, which is if that player agency only looks after the England players, maybe a fairer solution is that there is a union just for the men's game, and professional men's game, because all the men who are going to play for England play in the Premiership. Mm-hmm. That it's kind of does make, I mean, there is a sort of a direct cross subsidy there, but they are all basically competing for the same thing. And actually, they might come to the conclusion that, okay, well, as a player, I might only be in England one or two times, but I'll always be playing rugby. So actually, more money into the club game would benefit me more than more money into England.
Oh, can you? Do you know what? I can't stop thinking of how much more the sort of political and interpersonal games would happen when you're in the England camp and the cliques and stuff, because people are desperately like trying to keep hold of their massive chunk of cash for the next game.
It's a great point, isn't it? So you wouldn't risk it. I mean, it, just say if you were paid $350,000 a game. I mean, that's ridiculous.
It will never be that. No. But that's the entirety
even
of that would be.
Even if they doubled it, $50,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be more than that.
Why would
it could
you
be
play a single club game? I mean, why? The injury risk, the financial risk to you is just so great. And then if you don't play, then presumably someone else in your club is going to play. George Martin doesn't play, but say Chesham does play. You know, how do you then warrant being selected?
Yeah, you can't. The optimum number of games for your club is not zero. But the strategy is to drive it to the minimum games for the club. That means you are fit, ready and on form for selection for your country.
Martin and Chesson, one of them might do a Tonya Harding to the other one.
Well, yes.
Where the incentives are significant. I mean, that in that scenario where the entirety of the 100 million gets funneled to the players, it would be about 4.4 million pounds per year per player from those 12 internationals. Now, we know it's not going to be that, but there is a lot of room between 300k and, which is the 12 times 25.
And just ask guys like
4 million.
Well, just there's a number of players you can ask how quickly your career can end, whether that's an international player, whether that's as a rugby player, full stop.
Yeah.
It could have been Tom Willis. Could have been Tom Willis playing for England. So, you know, they do deserve more money. No, they don't deserve more money. Right? You don't deserve an intrinsic amount for playing rugby. You just deserve what you generate. And they generate a lot of money.
Market value.
The one issue I do foresee with that is the I don't like the feast and famine already between, like, you talk about the, I don't know who said, Phil, you used the phrase, the squeezed middle in rugby, or someone, I can't remember who talked about it.
Charlie Morgan. Yeah, it was Charlie Morgan.
You're going to get kind of the job in Premiership player on $50,000, and then you're going to get his teammate who plays for England on ridiculous money. Someone, and that feels a bit vulgar.
Yeah, remember, it won't be this multiple, but it could be. I think it will move it significantly.
Do you remember Rodri Gomez-Davis for Northampton?
No.
You
know, there's a centre called Rodri Gomez-Davis for Northampton, right? And he started 12 one day, and I remember this. He was a really good player. He played quite a lot, and then I think he went to Dragons, and then obviously his career died.
Standard.
But he was playing on, I guess, like 25,000. Wasn't a particularly big player, like a bit pop player. And then at 10 was Carlos Spencer.
Yeah.
On, what, 250? And at 13 was Bruce Ray Horner on about 250. And then you had this guy in the middle on 25K.
Well, that's how
that's
Pat,
how it works.
That's how Pat Lammers run Bristol. You have the turn left car park that's nicely paved, and then the turn right car park.
Gravel, dirt.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a farmer's field.
Yeah.
After a festival.
So... yeah, there is a problem there. To me, the England team feels like it should be owned by the Premiership clubs. So, if England team is owned by the Premiership clubs...
I'm going to totally disagree with that. That, I agree with you largely on the principle of what you're saying, but no, because, again, the Premiership clubs are there because of luck in the time and place, and then they've shut everyone else out.
What is it, luck and time and place, though? I mean, we're here because of luck and time and place. Do you know what I mean? Like, we were the first podcast. So, you know, we are here... because we were here first, and yeah, I didn't intend to give that away.
But then if you said, we run Spotify, because we were there first.
Yeah, or, exactly. Or the government put regulation to protect us.
Yeah. Yeah. There are no other... No new rugby podcasts are allowed to be started without us. Yeah, other rugby podcasts cannot start without us agreeing to it. Yeah.
Well, it is like all the AI organisations...
Please regulate
actively
us.
..actively lobbying, or Facebook lobbying for tighter controls on social media.
Yeah, no thanks. Yeah, so, no, I mean, look, we are where we are. There are huge holes in the professional game, but I just think the professional game merging with England professional would be so much better, because the owners are much more capable than the RFU. And, you know, look, the Premier League actually gives away...
Three clubs went bust.
Yeah.
Within 12 months of where we're sitting and talking right now, or a year ago, three clubs went bust.
Jersey went bust, didn't they? And, you know, you can point fingers directly at the RFU for that. You know, there are a lot of systemic reasons why, and one of the reasons is this sort of dual structure of the RFU of having one foot in the professional camp, one foot in the amateur camp.
And I'm back to agreeing with you totally. I don't know if there's a silver bullet, but I agree with you on the principles, and it's definitely going to be an interesting one to watch.
So there is one more thing that links to this, which is Borthwick, in the kind of discussions on this, I've not actually heard it, but I've seen quotes from an interview with Borthwick talking about the potential for hybrid contracts.
Mm.
And I don't want to go into it because he doesn't really give much detail, but one quote makes me think perhaps he has listened to us in the past, or it might have been last week or the week before. And the quote...
Bounty.
The quote is, it's relating to the bounty idea, which was... if there are specific positions where England are short of... then England can offer a bounty to generate English talent in those positions. The quote is, we have outlined positions where we don't have huge depth and we want to see the best players for club and country in those positions. So it is something that, like, Borthwick is obviously a very astute operator.
So he obviously listens to this podcast.
Yeah. Either he listens to the podcast, or what do they call it? Independent innovation, where the same...
genius idea.
Great minds think alike.
Yeah, like maybe Telegram, or I can't think of the examples of them. Maybe the internal combustion engine. Science and... intellect get you to a point where the same idea occurs independently in two places at once. So maybe it's that, or maybe Borthwick's just been listening to us.
Yeah. Well, he does listen. I can confirm that.
You're welcome, Steve. I hope you're doing all right, mate.
Yeah. Well, we'll go over the bounty stuff later if we have time, or maybe another week, because we did it last week.
Well, no wonder, with all that chat about all that potential cash, Emmanuel Faye-Wobosso looks like he's going to be picking England.
Good lad.
Yeah.
Good lad, so he should.
Whatever gets him the most cash.
Born and bred in Wales. I think just on a and principle, he should play for Wales, but he's entitled to do whatever he wants.
Is there something to do with... Is he not still a student at Exeter?
Yes.
So he has to leave university in order to go to the Welsh Regions or something ridiculous.
I don't believe for a second that if he wanted to transfer and someone at the WRU went to Cardiff Met or Swansea University. Look,
can I just make another...
Sort this kid out.
Another small suggestion for this player, which is you go to university in order to get qualified to get a job. You have a job. Sack off university, you can always go back later. Right, you're one injury away from re-enrolling in the Exeter Law degree, which you're currently studying for. You're absolutely fine. Everybody does that. Not many people become professional rugby players. Throw it in the bin. That's what I would say.
I like it.
It is. I don't know what the Welsh player payment is per game is probably about a quarter, something like that, a third, quarter to a third.
And at some point, you will have to go and play for a Welsh region.
Dragons.
As it currently is.
You might have to go and play for the Dragons. Yeah. Or any of them.
Yeah. But there is an interesting, you could try and model it, an interesting equation to say, how many games do I have to play for Wales? So if he only plays 10 games for England, he's got to play 30 or 40 games for Wales to make the money equate. Which does he think is more likely?
Yeah.
I think he's probably looking at England's stock of wingers and thinking they're bobbins compared to Wales.
Do you know what, though? They're not.
Of course they're not.
So the two England wingers, I don't think you and I, any of us, or any of the papers have suggested that these two wingers start for England. But England could call up on Muir and Ollie Thorley.
Yeah.
And they'd be amazing.
Yeah.
One even talks about them. So England have plenty of wingers. What I don't like about this, Fairwoboso, is the fact that he isn't good enough yet. He's nowhere near good enough yet.
No, agreed.
And the reason that he's getting fast-tracked into England is because he's dual-qualified. And this is one of my bugbears. So if I was him, I would demand I get a cap in the Six Nations. Someone give me a cap for the Six Nations and I'll sign.
Finn Russell was doing with Finn Smith.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, sorry, Finn Smith was getting from Gregor Townsend.
Yeah. Mm. So England did it with Sam Moore. I mean, I know I'm a mad conspiracy theorist and they would never do anything like this, but it does sound a little bit like they're doing something like this, doesn't it?
It does. This does sound a little bit.
He's not ready yet, but he's a brilliant player. He's just not ready. He scored a cracking try on the weekend. He's not ready yet.
He's looked very good the last few weeks.
Will Muir is ready. Ollie Thorley is ready.
I think any of those would do a hell of a job.
Yeah.
Playing for England. I think probably Ollie Thorley and Will Muir would be, based on what I've seen, probably better at the bread and butter of what Borthwick wants for a winger. But then Ben Earl or Tom Curry would be better at what Borthwick wants from a winger.
I tell you what, I was just thinking, I only semi-joke that those two should start for England. But every time something good happened on either side, one of those two
is involved.
And it's not because they're brilliant rugby players. They're not. They just try so hard and they're so aggressive.
I don't know if I honestly believe or not. I think I probably do believe in the concept of a test match animal. Maybe not to the degree that Eddie Jones believed in it, but I do think there is something. I'm struggling to watch Premiership games and think, oh, that was amazing. That guy's really got to be in the shop window for England.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, you see,
I do agree with that.
Well, you see the attitude. So I just think there's a way people think about wingers, and they think of fairly flash players, good finishers and all the rest of it, and they don't give enough weight to the attitude of a player. Now, the two lads I've just been talking about, their attitudes are very common in rugby, but in the back row.
Exactly.
Sort of like a Lewis Ludlam or...
That is exactly what
I love it.
Borthwick wants.
Yeah.
Borthwick wants kick chase.
That's what Borthwick wants, but then you look at who are the great wingers that have emerged in the last few years in world rugby? Damien Penaud.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but Penaud does have... he just wins things, doesn't he? He just does contests.
He does everything.
He does everything. So he's a physical freak and he's just amazing. His rugby brain's incredible.
Colby. But
I would say Kirtley Arendts is one.
Yeah.
Will Jordan's another. Louis Bielbire is another who's emerged. And all three of them, they work hard, but that's a prerequisite. On top of that, they have just exceptional rugby brains, skill levels. Natural.
Ability to step and glide. And
so, which is all layered on top of the absolute, non-negotiable, you work your nuts off every game.
Tell that to Henry Arundel.
Quite.
Did you see his effort trying to, going to tackle Leon? I feel like I'm getting on Henry Arundel's case.
Because Faz has told you so.
He's a freakish talent, but he's got so much to learn. And I'd say him and Owen Farrell are both guilty of what the British media does. One, you get a bright young thing, they get hyped up like they're the Messiah.
Yeah.
And then you get someone who is amazing and has been there, and you knock them down. Okay. And neither are true. Henry Arundel is nowhere near top level quality yet. So, and if you have a look at for Racing at the weekend, it was such a your man tackle. It was one on one with Leone Nakarawa. And we've all been there where you go, yep. I better look like I'm making a tackle, but I'm really not.
Yeah, that's exactly it, isn't it? So, rugby is littered with these sort of wingers. Cock and a singer used to be like this. Just couldn't get himself in the game. Didn't think quick enough. He's actually really good now, and he played another good game. Not a level of those two other boys, but a really good game. I can't mention him really. Arundel is just Tom Varndell would be one. Like superb talents, but they stand out on the wing and they wait for the game to come to them. And occasionally they do amazing things.
Almost too talented to be good.
Yeah. Whereas, I mean, Will Muir can run. That's the other thing.
He can.
And so Thorley can... I mean, Thorley is going to die on a rugby field. It doesn't give me any pleasure to say that, but it will give him pleasure.
He's like Will Addison. He just needs to take 5% off at times.
And the thing is about these players is you don't have any wasted personnel. It's not like you've got two guys on the wing that aren't going to contribute. They'll be there somewhere in the trenches. So... England could do so much worse than Muir, Thorley, and who having outside centre played today for Bath?
Lawrence.
Just animals. Absolute animals.
Well, speaking of the same game, do you know who else left absolutely everything out on the pitch, including his lunch? Alfie Barbary. And that shot of him just after the final whistle, just chundering. And what I quite liked was the polite little... Covering his mouth with his hand. true rugby values right there. Shielding that from women and children.
What did you think of the game?
Well, just before that, have you ever chundered from physical exertion?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, any stories?
It was a 2K row test when I was rowing at Exeter University.
Ooh,
and
nice.
And I did the thing where my feet were still in the foot things, and I just fell off. So I had to have someone take my feet out and get sat up. And as someone sat me up, my tummy was all crunched together because I wasn't sat up properly, and I just spewed on my shorts.
Oh, nice.
And on the floor.
Classy.
Yeah.
I spewed up after a sprint finish in the school cross country.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
So to win it. So you wouldn't think it's talking to me now, but as a reasonable runner back in the day.
I've done loads of nervous pukes
never done that.
And the other time that I threw up was about an hour after, and it was nothing to do with alcohol, an hour after the first version of North Dorset Sevens, when I did every game of the
that was
and every game, every minute of every game of both tournaments.
You would. Done after that.
I couldn't believe. Absolutely exhausted.
And the other thing, I was just thinking about nights out drinking, and this is maybe some would say a shameful thing to do, but at court sessions and such, I've done many a tactical.
Shame. Shameful.
Just to try and stay in the game for longer.
I probably should have done more tacticals, I'll say that.
How about you, Phil? Enough. You're very quiet there.
Just one that I can recall from exertion, not rugby, more similar to Jay, it was a... at Berry Track, aged about 15 or 16, doing a 300-metre session.
Oh.
And I can't remember the number, but it was far too many 300s, running them as if you're running a 200, so running them as about as hard as you can run them, just over and over and over again. Yeah, horrible, horrible.
I was surprised how much Alfie Barbary had to excel at that point.
Well, he's only been on the field for 20 minutes. Look, I've already said I'm worried about his conditioning. Those things have eased off, but maybe they'll go back. You know,
yeah.
I think about that again, though. So I thought it was a really interesting game, this. I thought, what would I think? I thought, first of all, Gloucester do the hard things really well and the easy things not at all. and they let themselves down so much today. But then Bath's decision making was equally horrendous. They should have come away. They should have buried Gloucester.
Yeah, Gloucester really did a good job at dragging Bath down to their level.
Yeah, I'll give you an example of when I really thought Gloucester were great. Their defensive efforts on their 5 metre line. You know, really, really tough, difficult stuff where, you know, it's all pride and, you know, that is hard work. And then I'll tell you when they were absolute morons, when Johnny May gives away that penalty when they can't catch a ball. Why are they not deep enough as a back line? Why are they not deep enough as a back line? I can't understand that. Why are they throwing the ball on the floor? Why can't they catch it? These are real issues. And Bath were not good, actually. Mm. Bath were also responsible for throwing the ball on the floor. But their biggest problem was they just decided they didn't want to win it. They kept on looking for the corner, they carried on scrimmaging. They just needed the points.
Mm. If they'd taken the points more, well, they didn't get a penalty, did they? They just went for the corner and were fair play to Gloucester, because Bath's line out and driving maul has been one of their real strengths this season. And Gloucester did a good job to shut it down.
The game would have been out of sight as well if Finn Russell had his kicking boots.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. But yeah. Yeah, so there's a few things going on there. I just feel so, I really wanted Gloucester to win this. Because I just didn't feel they need a bit of a turn of luck rather than anything else. The thing I didn't like about Bath is that I think last week I said that their success it might be a bit frail because they're a new team. And that's the thing, what we saw today, actually. I think you saw a bit of their growing pains as they're trying to merge this all these new pieces together. And they would have benefited from going to Welford Road last week and continuing to grow. But instead, they've taken a week off and they're just trying to find their feet again.
Well, so when I was just looking ahead on their fixtures, after Europe, they've got a nice Bristol v Bath derby. That'll be a fun game to watch. Maybe we can watch that one when we're in Paris. That's Saturday night. That's the Saturday night, which obviously the game we're going to see in Paris.
Yeah.
Owen Farrell's Racing 92 are playing on Sunday night.
And have you seen the early kickoff on the Saturday when we were in Paris?
No.
It is your beloved Bayonne travelling to my beloved Bordeaux.
Mm. Oh, fantastic. Oh, my beloved Bayonne had a heartbreaking 1-point defeat away to your beloved Bordeaux.
Oh, wait.
That was the game this weekend.
Oh, sorry, that's this weekend. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah,
you're getting confused.
Your beloved Bordeaux beat my beloved Bayonne by a point with a last.
Oh, it was Luku, wasn't it?
70-minute try.
That's where I've seen it.
Yeah, but no, the end of the month. Yeah, Bordeaux are playing Stade, Bayonne are playing Oyonnax. So, anyway, the Saturday night game there will be Toulon v La Rochelle, but we'll be there for Racing to lose. You come into that, JB?
Work in progress. Yeah. So the other thing I thought was interesting about this game is the impact of the benches. So you don't think of Gloucester as having a particularly strong bench or deep squad. I thought when Cam Jordan came on, he made a real difference, and I thought Clement made a real difference too.
Clement is a good player. I've really enjoyed him this season.
Yeah, just big ball carriers. Exactly what they needed.
I'll tell you who was a sight coming on. Fraser Balmain has bulked up even more.
He's huge, isn't he?
He was playing so well the first few months of last season. He was the best tight head in the Premiership, and I was genuinely thinking that he could be England's starting tight head at a World Cup.
So,
and he had a massively unfortunate and long injury.
So yeah. Balmain's back, and once they get what's the other boy? The loose head.
Oh, Valrapalva Ruskin.
They will be frightening up front. But at the end of the day, 8 losses now.
And 9 losses, isn't it?
Is it 9 losses?
I think it's 9.
Yeah.
And the worst part about it is, it's one of those, like, you're not going to play well every single game, and they didn't play well in large parts of this, in the same way that Bath didn't. But when you're losing, when you lose and you're playing well, and then you lose and you're playing poorly, it just really affects the fans, because you're just this horrible habit of like losing all the time. Bath, on the other hand, are in this habit of winning, so they didn't really play much better, but they've just got that habit of getting it done, and that was the difference. I don't know how Gloucester remedy this, because they're going to look at that and go, "That was amazing. The defence part was amazing. The bit which which is probably the most important bit, is great." Why is Hastings throwing the ball forward? Why is he throwing it behind his attacking line? Like, that is unacceptable. But it's also unacceptable that the back line is so shallow. But why is he not just stopped to see where they are? I don't get that. And right at the end, I don't know if you noticed the break from... Was it Mercer? No, it was Harris, because he's causing me some issues. Now, Harris has gone from being one of the best players in the Six Nations, or one of the best home nations players, where you just put him on international pitch, doesn't matter if it's wing or outside centre, he does really well.
Yeah.
So something of a liability now.
Yeah, well, I mentioned him in defence last week, or the week before, and again, was it Lawrence? And there was a bit of a bump. Yeah, it was Lawrence gave him a little bit of a bump for the Muir try. But it's the kind of thing where he should really have got through there.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was the de Glanville try. Anyway, He just again looked doing things that Chris Harris a couple of years ago you would say he would never do because he's an absolute rock in defence.
So someone was describing how Chris Harris plays to me, and they were saying that what he's really good at is his defensive reads. He gets into positions which you would never coach a player to get into, and he makes things happen. And I wonder if that strength has now become a bit of a liability.
So, or if you lose a little yard of pace, he doesn't have the ability to make up for being
something like that.
Yeah,
that's a fair point because he's probably 32, 33.
Yeah, and he just didn't look good. So you know, he played on the wing in Japan.
He was also up against Ollie Lawrence.
Yeah, but he's meant to be one of the best in the world. So he behaved like one of the best in the world.
He's a lion.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't be afraid of anyone.
Yeah, but Ollie Lawrence being put into position by Finn Russell will trouble many an outside centre.
And having two absolute weapons on the wing either side of him. So he's got threats everywhere. And I tell you, the guy who, you know, we keep saying Finn Russell, start saying Cam Redpath, because I think he is playing really, really well.
Just looking at the Gloucester's fixtures going forward, ignore the next 2 weeks because it's Europe and it doesn't matter. End of January, they play Sale, they host Sale, which Sale have to correct their last couple of weeks, which will come on to this week. Then in February, they've got one game against Exeter. In March, they travel to Leicester.
Oh, that's the Premiership Rugby Cup, by the way, that one.
Which one?
February.
There's no Premiership games through the Six Nations. Yeah, you're right. Then they have two legit Premiership games against Tigers and then Bristol. So 29th of March is their realistic next chance of a Premiership win. If they miss that, they then play Saracens, Exeter, Northampton and finish the season against Newcastle. So their next win
is Newcastle.
Is a coin toss as to whether it's Bristol at the end of March or Newcastle to finish their season.
Eight games left.
Do you know, I was thinking about this today and I thought, I mean, I don't want to give any credit to anyone in the administration for rugby for how the Premiership has turned out this year. To rip off someone else's joke, it's a little bit like giving the captain of the Titanic credit for discovering, you know, the benefits of ice baths.
Like Wim Hof. Yeah.
Right, they did not design this, but with so few games, first week of January, it's not exactly the week where everyone spends all of their money, because they have none. And Exeter was absolutely bouncing.
Yeah.
Rammed. Yeah. Welford Road looked absolutely intense. I actually was speaking to someone who took their kids there for the first time. It was brilliant. Like, massive atmosphere. I don't know about Sale, because I didn't watch that game. And then today's game, it was bouncing. In the rain, in the cold, it was full.
I'd be interested to see how many of the clubs have sold like half-season tickets. Because they normally do like a discounted version for 100, 150 quid, something like that. And I suspect this year will have been higher, because the quality of rugby is good. You got stars from the World Cup on show. It's looking good. The product
looks great,
doesn't it? Yeah, the product is looking good. But you're right, it's by sheer look rather than design up to this point.
Yeah. So, I think the idea is, now if you're a fan, I mean, everyone down to Leicester is really in with a shout of making the playoffs. Leicester are a superb team at the moment, and they're sitting at eighth or something.
Seventh.
With
Bristol at eighth.
Who beat the second team, unfortunately.
Well, the second team who are now in fifth.
Yeah. So everyone is invested because it's such a close league.
Yeah, yeah.
And not only that, the quality's high. You've got all these players on show. And if you don't go now, you're going to miss the season. You've only got a few games left.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think getting rid of three clubs has worked wonders.
I don't disagree, but I'm just going to again play devil's advocate. Everyone's invested. Are they?
Newcastle, no.
No,
and also, are they? I don't know what the viewing figures are. No.
But let's just bin off the viewing figures for now, right? Because we're obsessed by viewing figures. And that's not going to save the clubs. Because BT Sport or TNT Sport or whoever it is are not going to pay that much more for rugby ever again. I think you've probably seen the high watermark of professional sport in terms of TV deals.
Professional rugby?
Yeah.
Not football?
Rugby is going to survive, and I've said this before the season even started, if it's got a chance of surviving with this awful CBC deal, it's going to be locally generated revenue. It's going to be Exeter selling 14,000 at Exeter, right? Week in, week out. It's going to be Welford Road packed out week in, week out. That's how rugby survives. So screw the viewing.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Figures that will come hopefully after they build a really strong local foundation. They need to fill their rounds.
I agree with you, and that is a bottom up kind of view to take. But the losses that are being incurred by these owners
can only be dealt with short term at the ground.
Yes,
that's the only way you can do it.
I agree with that, but they're beyond their means until they get a TV deal that they imagined they would get when they signed the CBC.
Yeah. I remember hearing Bruce Craig, or certainly had seen it written down from Bruce Craig it must be 10 years ago when we first started the pod, and they just signed a bumper BT Sport deal, and it had gone up by X percent, 20%, 30% on the previous deal. And he was saying that, yeah, we anticipate that every time there's a TV deal, it will be increasing by these percentages. And it's
inflation means it's actually gone down. In real
but
terms.
Also that was pre-CVC. So not only has it gone flat and inflation has eaten away at it, 27% of it is now taken by a third party.
Yeah, and even the brightest people, and there's no talking about Bruce Craig's a very clever man. Even the brightest people are going to get predictions wrong. I mean, you know, if you want to be a successful fund manager, you need to get 51% of your decisions right, which means, we know what that means. He's got that horribly wrong. So the future of rugby has to be in the stadium, people going through the turnstiles, going to watch events. Do you know what it's similar to Tim? It's like in the music industry when it used to be all about the record label deal, and now it's all about the tour. Because that's how you make your money. You've got to get people through the door.
And I've got a mate who's in a band that are going back out on tour, and the merch is like where they make their money.
Touring and merch, and like football clubs now, an enormous amount of the margin is made through hospitality. It's getting businesses to spend mega money on a box or the corporate seats with the dinner and do that every single home game.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was what? Did you see the Crosshill kick this week?
The Crosshill kick.
To win the game. Which game am I talking about?
Northampton Saints. No,
that wasn't a Crosshill kick. That was Mitchell.
Yeah.
Boys, Aylesbury beat Cobham.
Yeah, Aylesbury finally got themselves a win after all those. I looked at the table that Aylesbury are in, and they beat Chobham higher than them in the table. That was only their second victory of the season, and yet they are third from bottom, and the other team that has just two wins, the team below them have three wins, but the team at the bottom of the table with two wins are some 10 points behind them due to all the losing bonus points and try bonus points they've scored in those gallant defeats. Well, they got themselves a win.
Right. So just as this is the noise at Aylesbury. So over it goes, Crossfield kick, wingers free. Local rugby, everyone, level 7. That is what it means when Aylesbury win. Isn't that good?
Fantastic. And
they'll have loved it as well because Marlowe got humped.
Yeah, what a week. What a week. 43-5. Cheers.
What did Tok H do?
It's a bad week.
What was it?
I thought
you got a win against Aspel.
No. No, we did not get a win against Aspel. So,
was that last time?
I came off the bench. And I'm not going to lie, I think I did pretty well. In fact, I did very well scrummaging and set piecing and all the rest of it. So we went from 7 points down, then we built a 6 point lead, and then we went into a 9 point lead, then to a 6 point deficit, and then to a 4 point lead. And then last phase of play, we gave away four penalties, and the fourth penalty, your boy decided to turn his back on a player who then tapped and went and scored.
Oh, no.
Completely my fault.
No, like, you switched off.
And do you know, I was giving it the big and like, we run to lineouts, we run to scrums, everyone looked keen.
You're massive on that as well.
Yep. And I was like,
Never looked tired.
And I turned my back, and their only not only dangerous player, that isn't a fair thing to say. They're really good. I mean, to be fair to them, they fought for everything.
Like, who is it you're playing?
Aspel.
Oh, so it was Aspel, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys lost by a point.
Yeah.
Gutted.
Heartbroken. Absolutely heartbroken. But they deserved it. You know, they stayed in the game throughout the whole thing. Their fly half kicked well. Our fly half kicked well. And we just couldn't separate from them. So really not a good result at all. And next week, if I'm available, I'm not sure I am, we're off to Widnes, who are top of the league and looking for promotion.
Good team as well, Widnes.
Very good team.
Gutted.
Yeah, not good. And the 15s in action?
Yeah, they shook the rustiness off. We haven't been able to play in a few weeks because of bad weather and Christmas and all the rest of it. So went to Bolton with a much depleted team and got a win away, which is good. But it was... yeah, honestly, our fly, it was one of those games where, and you'll know this as a forward, JB, and I don't know if you have the same mentality having played back, but a fly half that just puts you in the right part of the pitch is just, I just feel soothed watching our 10. His kicking is amazing, to the point that he's only just turned 16, and he's been asked to turn out for Leeds reserve team at Rugby League.
Has he?
He doesn't know whether he's actually going to do it. Because you can be a professional rugby player at 16 in rugby league. I don't know if it's the same at rugby union.
No, it's not 17.
Yeah.
Oh, is it 17?
Is it 17?
I don't know.
I think it's 17 for certain teams and 18 for senior teams. So it's 17.
I think George Ford made his debut at 17, I want to say.
So we can go and try. You can be a 16-year-old, like playing in the game that I watched today, and then you can go and play with fully grown men in a reserve league match at rugby league, which is mad. So that is crazy.
Well, we had Swinton Lions captain, was captain. He's now moved over to, I want to say Widnes Vikings, and he played for Wales, a guy called Mike Butt. And I'm sure he played for Broughton Park first team.
I remember the name.
George, I'm sure he played at like 15, 16 for our first team.
So George Ford was 16 years and 237 days when he made his Leicester Tigers debut.
Wasn't that a final?
Wow.
That was Anglo-Welsh Cup.
Oh, right.
Wow, he was 16. Now I've got Louis's going to be 16 this week. That is insane. That is insane.
Well, did you see the age-related, this will be a trivia question, or it would be on Question of Sport if it still existed. Thanks, Hugo. in future. But did you see the age-related trivia piece from yesterday's football?
No.
So, a player came off the bench for Blackburn in the FA Cup at 15 years and 300-something days.
Oh, my goodness.
So, he was the youngest ever player for Blackburn, and he had to wear a different shirt from all of his teammates. Why?
Don't know. Don't tackle me shirt. That kind of thing. No what?
He couldn't have a... Oh, it's something to do with a sponsor.
Sponsorship.
Oh,
gambling.
Not alcohol, not betting. This is a sign of the times. This is very zeitgeist.
Crikey.
He couldn't have a... Black Lives Matter. I don't know. What do they have on shirts? On football shirts?
Gambling, alcohol, no smoking anymore. Vapes.
There you go.
Wow.
It was a vape sponsor for the Blackburn kit. That is very 2024.
Crikey.
Wow.
Love that.
Wow.
great.
There you go.
So it's not black. It's kick it out of racism is the. That's all I was trying. Yeah. I was going through what's on football shirts. What do I see on football shirts?
Oh yeah, because he's a massive racist, so he's not. Doesn't want that on his shirt.
I don't want that.
I'd be tempted. So I'd be
sorry
tempted.
To that young gentleman. I apologise.
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm talking of those sort of things on shirts. I mean, I'd be tempted if I played professional sport not to have any kind of campaigning on my shirt whatsoever, if I could get away with it. But in Australian Rugby League, NRL, which was the team that refused to play in their rainbow tops?
Oh, yes.
There was a team that refused to play in rainbow tops. I'm like, more power to you. Absolutely not doing that. There's also an NHL hockey player who decided not...
No, it was the AFL.
It was AFL
said the Sydney Swans cannot have a rainbow shirt because it's a political statement and they don't want any of that on their kids.
No, there's definitely an NRL team that did it as well. So the players just said, I'm not wearing it.
Oh, no, here we go. Sorry, I'm confusing the stories here. The Sea Eagles players sat out the round 20 NRL clash against the Roosters after refusing to wear the club's inaugural rainbow jersey.
That's it. I wouldn't wear it. Not a chance. Wouldn't wear the laces, wouldn't wear anything.
I imagine there's a few hard Christians a la Izzy Falau in that team.
Many Pacific Island players will probably be with you on that team.
Yeah, and people that don't want to wear it, who are not from the Pacific Islands.
Yeah.
So
anyway, a lot of religious South Africans would probably...
Did you see a certain Pacific Islander charging through the Saracens' defence?
I did. Kata.
He's been a remarkably good signing.
Yeah, great signing. Him and Visa are just such destructive carriers, aren't they?
The only issue I have with Kata being there is it links back to what Steve Borthwick was talking about earlier when Steve Borthwick was picking up on what we said on last week's podcast, is Dan Kelly is a 12 who's playing at 13 because Kata is there.
Yeah, and Kata can't really, not really a 13.
No, Kata can't really play 13. He's doing very well at Leicester, but so he's playing well for Leicester to England's detriment.
Well, he was playing on the wing for Exeter.
Yeah, true.
So, I mean,
they played 32-year-old Ian Whitten on the wing as well.
that is true. I mean, two teams here that are in a very, very different place. And I've been thinking about this both in terms of the actual match itself and the future of both these sides. Leicester look like they're ready to win now. They have to win now.
Well, they do with Visa going.
Is Visa going?
He's definitely going. They're not. Unless I've missed it, it's not been announced where he is going, but it has been announced that he is leaving at the end of this season.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. France. Must be France.
It will be
France.
Got
to be France, right?
Unless it's Japan on stupid Japanese money. That means
which is where Lewis Rees Sammit might be going, apparently.
There's a lot of talented players selling photocopiers picking up mega money.
Would that mean he can't play for Wales, though? Or would they... Because the Japanese season is only very short, so...
Yeah. He could then be available... potentially for a short-term contract if anyone has enough salary cap left.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. They just look awesome. I mean, I thought Ollie Chasen, particularly in the first half, just looked imperious. He looks like every inch an international second row.
And his cover tackle in the 78th minute on, I think it was Lewington trying to get away.
Yeah.
Was very, very impressive. Like Martin was impressive as well.
I think about the great Leicester second rowers, and obviously the great Leicester second row you think of is Martin Johnson.
Yeah,
but he never played like that.
Oh,
like,
no.
He would wander from ruck to ruck shouting obscenities and being a bit dirty. And that's great. I mean, there was a time and a place for that.
Ben Kay, who played alongside him, was more athletic back in the day.
Yeah.
But not... I don't think... Chesham is like a combination of those two, the highest points of those two rolled up into one.
He's incredible. And like the way he approaches
Martin
the
line
out and the confidence that he's showing now, he's maturing into just a great player. So he's patrolling the field. And I kind of forgot at that point that there's another player on the field called George Martin. Then he starts absolutely wiping people out.
Nailing people.
Second half, I think he had like two back-to-back tackles, and he is just a freak of nature. But then you've got all the other boys that are starting to contribute. Like Cronin was very good at scrum time, although everyone's good at scrum time against Saracens.
It did help.
And that's what I was going to say, that's the context for this. And we've all been in matches like that. The scrum has that much of it filters out into the rest of the game. And this is where as impressed I was as I was by some of those Leicester players, and I'm looking at England's tight end position, desperately willing someone to make that shirt their own.
Joe Hayes.
And Joe Hayes may be that guy.
But then
I was watching this and thinking, oh, awesome, Joe Hayes is playing. Oh, he's playing against Christian Judge.
Yeah.
Ollie Hoskins coming off the bench. It's not.
Who's a nice?
He's not up against Stephen Kitsoff.
They are nice. They are nice. Premiership squad.
No, those are tight end props I was talking about. He's up against Crean and Mullapola.
Mullapola should have started because as soon as he came on. He's much better.
Hayes had gone off by the time Mullapola came on, he must be 140 kg in his current incarnation.
Well, Mullapola was the one that really got me thinking. So the way this game was played, if you watched it, so I was watching, and I couldn't help but notice it was like an international game because, well, Leicester like a more international style game with kicking for territory, pressure, loads of physicality and intensity. And Saracens, whose heartbeat of that team are internationals, and they like playing the England way because, well, who are they? It's Owen Farrell, Mara Toji.
Earl and Elliot Daly.
I totally disagree. They like playing the England way. That was true 5, 6, 7 years ago. It's not true.
Oh, man. I don't know, Tim. I mean, if you
going to Welford Road with a scrum on ice skates, a scrum on roller skates, I totally agree. They had to try and play that game and get some territory because
they were so aggressive. Yeah, both teams are so aggressive.
No, they were, but all I'm saying is Saracens have been one of the best attacking teams in recent years.
Really good attacking prowess.
And that was a point that was made that over 75% of their tries have come from three or fewer phases.
Yeah.
Strike moves, basically.
But if they fail in that first phase, so they do have that in the locker, you're absolutely right to point that out, but if they fail in that first phase, you watch them around the breakdown and how they play in open play, there was times in this game that reminded me of watching an international game because just the ferocity around the breakdown and how they were trying to defend. The problem that Saracens have is, although the heartbeat of that team can do it, maybe four or five players, the pieces that they're putting in to support them can't. And that was so true with the scrum because the players just are not up to standard.
Mm-hmm.
It's true with some of the substitutes, and they're just taking these pieces away and they're more reliant on that core, and that core is getting older and older and older. And one of the things that I would be worried about, Elliot Daly broke through the line and he's just got open field in front of him. Now, old Elliot Daly scores from that position, probably. And also, old Elliot Daly doesn't get burnt for pace by Dan Kelly on a chip and chase.
Yeah, I think the angle. So, in Elliot Daly's defence, the Saracens ran that strike move twice. Yep. Once Tom Parton scored because of the Elliot Daly pace, when he went round, it was either Catter or Kelly. The second time in the second half, they didn't. But that Kelly try, although there was the Kelly non-try, it looks a bit funny because of the angle. Daly was coming across. I think Daly's still a super player. I think he'd still be starting for England on the wing.
I'm not sure he should. Not over Thorley and Muir. but you look at Saracens and you wonder, is the mindset behind that team like Manchester United or Man City? Like, we want a dynasty to win forever and a day. And that's why they keep with these core players and just carry on trying to patch the holes people here and there.
Hold on.
Rather than Exeter, who are like, well, let's just destroy it and start again.
Well, hold on. They've got a massive European fortnight ahead and they rested a bunch of players.
Okay, but I just don't think. I mean,
they're playing Phil's beloved Bordeaux.
And how many wins have they got in Europe?
They're going to get crushed by my beloved Bordeaux.
Well, that's it. If they do lose to Phil's beloved Bordeaux, they're in trouble.
They've got. I don't think they've got a single win yet.
Yeah, they got one.
Who against?
So they lost Connacht against Connacht, the Bulls away, and hammered Connacht. Yeah, put 50-odd points.
They've got Lyon at home in the final game, which you would expect them to come through, but they've got to try and get something out of the Bordeaux game. And the fact that they rested a bunch of players, and Leicester at home, predictably, went with pretty much, well, most of their big guns.
All of their big guns.
I think this.
And they could reinforce them off the bench as well, which is big. So two guys come on in Harry Wells, who I think has been superb this season, and Kyle Hatherall, who is a monster. You know, it makes a huge difference. Huge, huge difference. And Saracens can't do that at the moment.
So I think Saracens, I think they'll be fine, providing they get their scrum sorted. And scrum will partly be getting a few people back fit.
Vunipola, George.
Yeah.
Alex Clary has been tight-headed.
Yeah, but this is Saracens through and through, isn't it? They're relying on one of those core players in Vunipola coming back, and he's not the same guy that he used to be.
Vunipola, Jamie George is still a classy operator, but Vunipola, the two Vunipolas are not the same player they were 3 years ago.
I'm going to say, I don't think Saracens make the playoffs.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
It's very tight.
It's really tight.
It's difficult because where they've come from, the success that they've had, I think the temptation is to carry on chasing the magic with those existing players, and I think they should go a different way.
Mm. Well, a club that did that in the past under Jim Mallinder is Northampton Saints. They're on a roll. That comeback against Exeter was something. 26-0 down.
Incredible.
Yeah, and I was watching the Leicester Saracens game, and it was, 26-0 after half an hour. Yep. Point a minute for Exeter, and one-way traffic. To come back from that, away at Exeter, and even for Exeter to go into the lead with a couple of minutes left and to score the final play of the game, the final try, that is a phenomenal win for Northampton.
Yeah. There's too much to think about with this game. So the first thing to think about is Northampton are the best team in the country at the moment, would you say? No.
Their form's the best. They're top of the league. What more can you say?
I think Leicester are the best team in the country at the moment. Full strength, Leicester are the best team. But then, maybe Northampton next.
Yeah, if you go for the players on the park, if there was a final tomorrow, probably, if you had like a round robin, or the top seven all play each other in 10 minute games, some way of determining the top seven to play each other, probably Leicester come out on top.
Yeah.
Then Northampton, then Quins, then Sarries, Bath, Exeter. Sale might be the bottom of that seven based on current form.
If they get everyone out, Sale are good, but as they showed on Friday night, if you take a couple of players out, they're not the same force.
So the point I was going to make on this is for Exeter, with what they're... Let's just pretend we've not seen Exeter play before. Let's pretend we're at the very start of the season and I read that team sheet. Do you think that those boys are going to win? Nope.
Exeter.
Let alone score 26 points in the first half against what we would probably describe as one of the best, if not the best team in the Premiership. So you've got that continuing narrative. We spoke about Rob Baxter and Exeter ad nauseum for ages now, so I don't want to go into that again. We know... Mm-hmm. Everyone knows that we think it's amazing what they've done.
Yes, and are continuing to do.
Yeah. Northampton, however, the knock on them is they can't play in the winter and they're flaky.
Which, the last 2 weeks, they've beaten Sale and Exeter, who are the epitome of the physical game in the Premiership.
This is going so well for Northampton now.
Well, again, but they've got a tight head prop.
Yep.
In Davidson.
They didn't even play. When you look at their back row, it looks like they're resting up players away from home for Europe.
Well, there's no Courtney Laws.
Yeah, there's no Courtney Laws. There was no Lewis Ludlam.
Ludlam, who's injured.
And there's
still no
Joano Augustus.
Yeah, fair point.
And there's no... I can't remember the other one. Tom Pearson was on the bench. So it was Coles, Scott Young and Graham were the back row. And, I mean, so that it's not only... So they're doing it with...
Well, they do like
rotated Scott team
with a fairly rotated team.
Yeah, they do. They do like Scott Young, and also Sam Graham. I think has earned that position now because he's been playing very well.
Oh no, but those two pedigree players not in the squad.
And those two are probably, if you listed all the back rows in order, Scott Young and Graham are probably fifth and sixth if everyone was fit.
Yeah,
they probably. You'd have Ludlam, Courtney Laws, Augustus. Pearson would be your first option on the bench, and then those two.
Yeah. The other thing as well is the guys you mentioned at 6 and 7 primarily play their rugby at second row.
So yeah, Coles.
So you've got a very, very big back row there. The other thing which is interesting about Northampton, I was talking to a well-known and highly respected rugby journalist this week, and it was also confirmed to us in an email, is that over the off-season they've been promoting their players to put on some weight. So apparently the backline was something like 5 kilograms a man heavier, which is a lot of weight.
Which Freeman looks like it, certainly.
Tell you the man who does look like it, and maybe not in the best way possible, that Litchfield looks like a big boy.
Yeah.
He looks like he's carrying some ballast. So he plays well.
Slight home, who scored a hat-trick, including the winning try. He's in tremendous shape.
Yeah, he's a powerhouse.
He's not a massive bloke, but he's just so athletic. Yeah. He's so fast.
Yeah, and then again, we were in the deepest, darkest of British winters, and they're getting it done. I absolutely love it. I can't get enough of it.
Mm.
And they're playing in a style which, you know, I don't think is great, but there we go. They, you know, winning games.
I'll always take winning games.
What are these guys going to do when it gets dry? They're going to be unstoppable. If they get into like the European playoffs and they've got a bit of confidence, lovely sunny days, they're going to be an absolute handful.
And if they make the top four, which looks likely on their current form, then they will also be, particularly if they get a top two.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they've got a 7-point buffer, which, bearing in mind there's only 8 games left, that's massive.
Isn't it?
Down to Sale in fifth spot, who will be very disappointed with their performance and the result against Bristol.
I think there's definitely parallels there, because Northampton doing things that you wouldn't expect against Exeter, and last week against Sale, to Sale's detriment. Bristol, this weekend, in tough conditions, coming up to the AJ Bell, middle of winter, and you would normally just say, well, physical pack from Sale, it won't be particularly pretty, because not many of Sale's games this season have been, but they will grind out a result. They didn't. Bristol ground out the result.
Yeah.
Bristol deserved to win this.
Yeah, and one
unfortunately,
thing...
Unfortunately, I've not seen it, so I can't comment on it, but okay. You can tell what happened.
Just a couple of things I'll pick out from the game was that Gus Waugh has been talked up as potential England scrum half in some quarters, but Harry Randall rinsed him.
Did he?
Yeah.
For the first try, yes. He looked very lively and very sharp. Although he went off early, didn't he?
Yeah.
But yeah, Randall looked good.
AJ going back to the AJ Bell.
AJ looked good. Controlled the game nicely.
Yeah.
Sinclair looked good. Sinclair scrummaged well and put in a few big hits and a few nice carries as well.
I'm really not finding this conversation comfortable.
Well, I was thinking it's interesting. We've been talking about who is going to play tight head prop for England, kind of assuming that the two incumbents, Sinclair and Will Stewart, have not been doing very much and don't really deserve their place. Perhaps it is the incentive that Sinclair needs. He looked good in this game. Now, you can probably count on one hand the number of times I've said that this season.
Yeah. But
he looked good in this game.
They did show up with a back row of Luatua, Daniel Thomas, Marcus Bradbury. So when they get everyone together, they're all right.
Happy to jettison on loan to I can't remember, was it Ospreys or someone?
Yeah. Scarlets to try and get in Jack Willis.
Yes.
And then,
who wouldn't, to be fair?
With Josh Caulfield and Joe Batley, players that they picked up from the busted Irish and Worcester, and they were squad players there. So they've... No, I don't think you look at the players and go, oh yeah, they're likely to win. But I'll tell you one thing, Sale looking to solve their issues. Johnny Hill looks like he's off to the top 14, to Lyon. And Luke Cowan-Dickey could be going there as well. Eventually, Luke Cowan-Dickey getting his move to France that he messed up on last time. It actually looks like he dodged a bullet with Montpellier, who could be getting relegated this year.
Well, Lyon could be getting relegated as well this year.
True, actually. It could be either or.
It could, yeah.
That'd be quite funny if Sam Simmons and Harry Williams' Montpellier managed to gather a bit of form and relegate the soon-to-be Luke Cowan-Dickey's Lyon to scupper his deal once again. Sale are in conversation, they're having chats with Charlie Ewells.
As you can imagine, I'm thrilled by that. I can't think of a better solution to any second row problem than Charlie Ewells.
It is Charlie Ewells post a little sabbatical in South Africa, remember?
Yeah, fair, true. again, you know, Sale are in a situation where they spend a lot of money and they are, I think, in a mindset where it's just plug the holes. Like, you lose someone, you try and find a replacement. And I don't think it's wise to try and find a replacement for Johnny Hill, because Johnny Hill's a Lion. Is he a Lion? Have I made that up?
Yeah. Two and a half years ago.
He's a Lion. He's an unusually big bloke. He is an international class lock. I don't think you go and buy someone else's international class lock. You've just got to sort of develop your own or find one, which is much, much cheaper. You don't just go and get the ready-made thing.
You've got to do what Baxter's done with Tashunza and Jenkins, or what Leicester have done with Martin and Chesham. It's that you've got to take.
The reason they're not keeping Johnny Hill is because they can't afford Johnny Hill, and therefore they can't afford a direct replacement for Johnny Hill. So they're just going to get a worse version, and that would be Johnny Hills.
Yeah, that is a great explanation of it. Yeah. You're better to put your eggs into four young lads who have the potential. They have maybe close to or potentially close to similar attributes, but they are nowhere near the finished article, and hope that one or two of them
get there. Right. That's exactly what you've got to do. Like, Luke Cohen-Dickin can leave for all I care. I don't know what he's on, but, they've got other hookers.
It won't be Montpellier money, but it won't be. It'll be a decent chunk.
Yeah. So
Sale, having lost the last two games in very un-Sale fashion, having been bullied by, or been beaten by weaker teams in favourable conditions and weaker physical teams, or those that we would perceive to be weaker physically, I am quite negative about Sale making the top four now.
I'm not. I think they'll come good.
I don't know. There's a couple of worrying things. Like, one, their scoring has just been, as in point scoring, gathering points on the board. They have scored, only Newcastle have scored fewer points than Sale.
Yes.
Gloucester have scored more. Bristol have scored Bristol have scored 70 league points more than Sale. That's a problem.
It's not great, but the other team can't win the game if they don't score more than Sale. So I'm okay. True. With that. I'm okay with that.
But their points against is there or thereabouts with all the teams around them. So they've scored within a couple of percent the same as. They've conceded within a couple of percent the same as Leicester Tigers, Saracens, Exeter, Bath and Quins, with only Northampton of the top seven who are leakier. Northampton are 10% leakier than Sale. But all those other teams have scored 80, 90, 100, 120 points more across those 11 games.
I think Sale will win the next game, so I think they've got Gloucester next. So I think they can do that.
That is very doable.
I think they can probably beat Bath, although I wouldn't guarantee it.
Where is it?
Bath.
I'm less confident. If it was at home, I'd say
they'd be favourite. Is going to make a huge difference to Bath. I've just thought about it now. Sam Underhill coming back.
Yeah, and do you know what the other thing to think about that is, it's not even worth talking about that fixture because that game that you're making reference to is 75 days away.
Can't come soon enough.
So there's a lot of rugby, a lot of players to be missing or available or in form or not between now and then. Probably, unless there's anything else on the Premiership, we should throw our focus on to next weekend.
Well, just given that we've got one game in the next 75 days in the Premiership, if you were going to put four names in an envelope now of who's going to make the top four, who would you put in? Tim Cocker?
I'll tell you, it'd be different to what I would have said at the start of the season.
Oh yeah, 100%.
I still think, despite being, 6 points outside of the playoff spots, I still think Leicester will make the playoffs.
I think you're probably right. Excuse me.
I think Northampton, because they've got the 7-point buffer, I think that will be enough, whether they stay in top spot or not, but I think they will make the playoffs.
Yeah.
So that's Leicester, Saints. I think Quins probably will. And the final spot is the one that I'm finding really hard to call. And it's out of Bath, Exeter, Sale, Saracens.
That's everyone else.
So, four. So it's out of one of those four: Bath, Exeter, Sale, Saracens, which is as they are in the table, third, fourth, fifth, sixth at the minute, and there's 5 points separating them.
With Saracens in the worst position.
So I'm going to say now, it's not Saracens.
I'm just going to look at their fixtures.
It's not
who
Bristol.
They've got to play. Saracens when they get back from Europe, they play.
They've got to play seven out of the.
Exeter at home, Quins at home, Northampton away, Gloucester at home, Bath away, Bristol away, Sale at home. I reckon Saracens will pick up enough points. So I'm going to go.
I don't think they will.
I'm not sure.
I don't see where. I don't see where the easy game because
Quinns or Northampton.
They lose their England players as well, and they're going to.
Yeah, Northampton, Quinns, Leicester.
Yeah, agree with all those three.
Saracens. I'm going to go for Saracens.
You're going Saracens.
You Northampton,
Quinns.
Quinns 5 points behind Bath
and Leicester.
Leicester. Yeah.
So we're all going Quinns, Northampton, Leicester.
I think those three.
I know. So we'll do it. Hang on. I'm going to do it two ways. I'm going to say the teams I want to be there. Well, Northampton, Tigers, Exeter, Sale. But okay. I'll put Bath in there as well.
And Quinns would be excited.
The playoffs. Yeah. I mean, 8 out of the 10 teams managed to get into the Champions Cup. So why not just have 8 teams in the, yeah, well, so just make the Premiership playoffs?
So 4 play 5, right, in order to get into the quarterfinal, into semi-final.
Yeah, have a wild card round where.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we do. Yeah.
Third and fourth have to play 5th and 6th.
Yeah.
But we need 7th in there as well. So 7th and 6th and 4th and 5th all play off each against each other.
No. Third play 6th and 4th play 5th to get into the semi-finals.
But 7th need to be in there as well.
Oh, right, you want 7 places?
Just because Leicester Tigers are currently in 7th, and we're all saying that they're going to make the top 4.
Yeah, so 7 play 6, yeah. Something
like that. Well, yeah, it just cascades along. 7 play 6 for the right to play 5th.
Yeah.
And it's a ladder.
Exactly right.
So we've got to have the club call somewhere in this.
Yeah.
If I was just to be very cold about this, as much as I want Exeter Chiefs to be in the top 4, and I'd love them to win the whole thing, actually, I don't think they're going to have enough. I think this young team are going to have... Like the way they couldn't quite finish the game against Northampton, which they should have.
Mm.
They've just got too much of a learning curve, I think.
And I also think what you've got to factor in here is the impact of the squads that have had Rugby World Cup players. Mm-hmm. And more. Because that over a season, that's going to even out. And Saracens and Leicester are the two that have been most heavily affected there.
Yeah.
I think Saracens are done.
They will be affected during the Six Nations and beyond. So Saracens, if they get the scrum... I would have confidence in Saracens. I just don't know if they can.
I think Bath have got two. I think Bath are a team that traditionally had misplaced confidence, and that's why they lost a lot, because they always thought they were too good to try hard. Like, oh yeah, I'll just come because we're all talented. And now I think they've got well-founded confidence because they're really talented and they're winning games.
It's well-founded confidence, but do you know why I want Saracens to make the top 4 and not Bath?
Owen Farrell.
Well, yeah, there's that. But it's also because no, it's because Bath are good because 3 clubs went bust. They're not good because they laid great foundations
so
in place.
True.
Well, and
so
they've got
true.
Finn Russell. And they paid £1 million a year to Finn Russell.
Yeah, they've got £1 million to pay Finn Russell, and 3 clubs went bust. Well done, Bath.
Oh, God, they've got Ted Hill to come back as well.
It's not a blueprint that
Hill
you
and could, Underhill.
You couldn't, if you were another club, you couldn't go, let's take a look at what Bath do and see what we can pick up. All right, spend £1 million on one of the best fly halves in the world and hope that 3 clubs go bust so we can just get cheaply their amazing players.
It's a good strategy.
Speaking of clubs going bust, did you see the email we got this week about Wasps?
I apologise, I haven't looked at any emails this week.
Tim, that's your job. You're the email guy.
Absolutely. I'm there we go. Wasps collapse legal case. From Jonathan, who's FRD Egg Chasers Premier League 2-time reigning, defending and everlasting champion.
Outstanding.
So he sent us a link to an article from the Midlands, about former Wasps owner Derek Richardson, who has put in legal papers seeking, according to this, £100 million plus for failures in advice from Kennedy's Law and its former partners in the restructuring of Wasps into a Maltese SICAV structure prior to them... it was in 2017, 4 or 5 years before they went into liquidation.
I mean, I have no idea why this would be worth 100 million.
It's to do with the valuation of Wasps between 62 and 72 million pounds in 2017, which at that point didn't include a £20 million shareholder loan into the business from Richardson. So... he's got a valuation of 60 to 70 million, plus he then loaned the business a further £20 million. And it's all to do with, if I have read this once a few days ago, it's to do with the voting structure and the opportunity to raise additional capital that this Maltese setup prohibited them from doing. And his argument is, if he'd had more control and it wasn't in this structure, he would have had more control, could have raised more capital, and they wouldn't have gone under. And he was badly advised by his legal firm. So he's effectively suing his law firm.
Why would you want... I'm going to have to ask someone who knows the answer. If you know the answer to this, get in touch. Why would you want to put a rugby club in a Maltese firm anyway?
Presumably, obviously this is his papers, the papers that Derek Richardson has served, and he doesn't go into it in any detail because he probably wouldn't in his legal papers, because it's painting him in a good light. I presume it was tax incentives.
I would presume it was tax incentives too. Interesting.
But he... according to these legal papers, didn't fully understand the implications of putting it into that structure and the loss of control it would...
100% in favour of people using tax schemes. 100% in favour. I'm also 100% in favour of people suffering the consequences of using tax schemes.
It's all trade-offs. No such thing as a free lunch.
Exactly right.
Yeah, and for every 10 people who do well from these tax schemes, if one person has £100 million consequences, think deeply about it.
I can't tell you how horrendous I have seen tax schemes go wrong. So by all means, do the tax schemes. But don't think you're cleverer than the revenue when you're doing them.
Yes. So that's... I hadn't heard anything of that. So thank you.
I should check the emails more often, because I've been contacted by AG1.
Yes, I know.
That supplement you always see on Joe Rogan's podcast.
Oh, yeah, and Tim Ferriss and others.
I didn't tell you about that because I thought you'd read it.
No, I hadn't read it, but I'll get us some AG1.
Excellent. Mm.
And then I'll talk about it, about how great it is once I've tried it. Anyway, what else was I going to say? Yeah, John Clark said, do you reckon the Bristol squad played various... clips of JB's pronouncements about Bristol and Pat Lamb during training.
So I think
as inspiration for their game on Friday.
Well, I was thinking about Pat Lamb, and yeah, perhaps. And there's also a email to us about Ibatoya. Why is he not considered for an England spot?
Yeah, Tim Ward has contacted.
Very fair point.
Contact edchases@gmail.com. Yeah.
And the reason is because I didn't watch him play this week, and his name's not Will Muir or Ollie Thorley. Do people in Bristol call each other lover? Have I made that up?
Oh, hello, my lover.
My lover.
Yeah. Maybe Pat Lamb should go by a new moniker of Pat the Lover. Because I think it's a really nice way, isn't it, to sort of embrace Bristol's culture of love, but also have connections to, like, the local area. So, Pat Lamb, the lover Pat Lamb.
The lover man. Lover Lamb.
Yeah, lover Lamb.
Lover Lamb.
Love it.
Right, JB, we have hit... your
hard
limit. So you need to go and pick up your beloved family. But before you do, can we just quickly run through the games this weekend?
Yes.
So,
and if your team plays in the Challenge Cup, be better.
Mm-hmm. So Friday night, we were hoping to... JB might still go to Northampton.
So you're definitely not going?
I really don't think I can, unfortunately.
Oh, man, you've let JB down. He was so excited about that.
I was really
seen
excited.
Big Court.
I'm really excited
about that. Is there anyone else? Maybe one of the Egg Chasers brethren?
I'll work something out. Don't contact me, I'll contact you.
So that is Northampton, who are going to beat down on Tim's beloved Bayonne at 8 o'clock on Friday night.
I fear you're probably right.
Then we have 2 1 o'clocks on Saturday, which is Lyon hosting Connacht, which Lyon are doing very badly in the top 14, but they've won 1 of 2 in the Champions Cup, so you'd assume Lyon at home. And the other 1 o'clock is Exeter hosting Glasgow Warriors,
which is obviously the one you're going to be watching. And I've actually been given some gainful work.
Have you?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Great news.
Not by TNT Sport, but by ITV. So I'll be on ITV for that one.
Well done.
Fantastic.
So you can watch ITV because you've got both options. You might as well just watch ITV, free to air and all that.
Yeah. I was going to mention something about the TV today. Have we got enough time?
Yeah, go
about
on.
About the comms.
Well,
have you got enough time? We're okay.
I'm fine. I felt the commentary with Ugo and Benkei today on the Bath game in the first half was just too negative. Austin Healey's been called up for this recently. And I kind of do agree with what people are saying. It was, I mean, I think Ugo was like, oh, it's a loop. There's a law which is a loophole. And Ben
Kay. Is that talking about the kicking back and forth?
Yeah.
The kick tennis.
I think what they were saying was fair. Because they don't want to see...
Yeah, and the loophole is one that Antoine Dupont brilliantly exploits for France, where you're...
You can stand still with a kick.
Yes.
As long as you're not... So when you're chasing a kick, you are offside if you are moving forward until the kicker or someone else has put you onside. But if you stay still, you're okay. And so Dupont... it's been highlighted that Dupont has done this intelligently. And others are starting to do it as well.
Yeah, so I think it's fair to have a discussion about that. But on the broader point, I've thought this for some time, and we're by far from the first to say, if you don't love rugby, how are you going to expect anybody watching to do? And you brought up many, many times in the past, JB, about the NFL, about
Eddie and Steve-O.
Eddie and Steve-O on the rugby league. Just first and foremost, enthuse about why someone should love it. And when that's not authentic, like when you hear someone going, this is incredible, 3-3 bun fight with 27 knock-ons. But
yes.
Or you occasionally, if you listen to commentary during women's football, I'm not sure too sure about women's rugby, but women's football, they're often...
Hold on, are you going to do a Joey Barton here, Phil? What's going on?
Well, I'll be careful not to say anything about your beloved ITV that you're working on, Tim. I'm definitely not doing a Joey Barton.
Yeah,
but sometimes you watch a little bit of play and something is described as an amazing worldy or that kind of thing, and it's objectively not to my eyes.
But there is a lesson about women's sport, which is no one dare criticise it. And therefore, the commentary is overwhelmingly positive. So there is a balance to be struck. I just thought, two things I thought. One, when they have those conversations, what happens is you enable other people to have the same conversation. So like on our WhatsApp group with a load of other rugby players, we start then talking about all the law variations. When actually we want to be talking about the game, and the commentary stream should be talking about the game. The other thing as well is, it's a weakness in rugby where it doesn't really exist in football, but in rugby it does, because the laws are so much more complex, not rules, laws, that we must change the laws. We must vary the laws again. Everything seems...
Thank you, Warren Gatland, for that as well.
Yeah. And every problem in rugby seems to have a law change which is needed. And I think even with the ones that they were talking about today, I think you said the only option is then to kick it. Well, that wasn't actually the case. If you watch the clip again, it makes the kick very, very difficult. You want kicking to be as dangerous as possible, because if you have it as dangerous as possible, then it breaks up the field of play, because you've got to drop more players back, you've got to defend the kicks. And to prove my point, the worst passage of play which we saw in this game was probably right at the end, where Gloucester had to run from their own 22 to try and score a try. And there's no danger of a kick, is there? So because there's no danger of a kick...
You have one man in the deep. Yeah, one man back.
How far do you think they got?
Yeah.
Not very far at all. And that's what rugby would look like if people who talk about depowering kicking got their way. It would look like that. And it would be dreadful, because nothing would happen.
Well, so, and I've... Sorry. Go on. I was going to say, I did a video on something like this on the YouTube channel, and the little phrase which I sort of accidentally came up with, which I think is apt here, is nobody... In the World Cup, in those big knockout games, no one, or the European Cup final between La Rochelle and Leinster, which was amazing, no one complained about kicks, no one complained about scrums, no one complained about reset scrums in those, because every small moment meant so much in the
I might have complained at the final scrum in the England South Africa match.
Yes,
slightly one eyed.
I hear you, but the general point.
But
is,
other than that, no, loved it.
If you want to solve rugby, it is not solved by tinkering with changing laws. It is solved by making more moments in matches that you watch more meaningful, and that means. That would be why I'd be an advocate for relegation in the Premiership, because it makes more moments more meaningful. And all the people talking about they want running rugby and stuff, it's a bit like Super Rugby. Doesn't mean anything.
Well, you can do it once you've got your foundations in place. Yeah. If that's a differential, like the old Exeter principle, and I've heard Baxi might have said this in conversation with you, JB, where he said, we will maul it and we'll pick and go until we've created space elsewhere, and then we'll go wide.
Yeah.
Because if you're stopping us here, if you're putting too many resources over here, there's space out here. And that's the best. Exactly. That is by far the best way of looking at it.
And there's the Exeter is a perfect example. They brought about the change in the law because they were too good and nobody could stop them. They brought in the goal line dropout, which has objectively been a big step backwards.
Yeah, I think that's a bad law.
Just on the
pick and goes. Bax is right. You can stop it. Do you know how you'd stop it? You'd get a collection of 120 kilogram plus men, and you could stop Exeter, and then they would score bags of tries out wide because your 120 kilogram men couldn't go out wide.
And they're exhausted.
You know, there was always a solution to these things, which doesn't require a law change. And I think that law change was particularly pernicious because Exeter built their team to do that, and it takes what, 3 or 4 years to change a team. Mm. It takes at least 2 years to change a team.
At least, overnight, and with a restricted salary cap longer.
Yeah.
But bearing in mind his stock has dropped, and we've you're right, we shouldn't talk about Rob Baxter again. But bearing in mind his stock,
we just love him so much.
His stock has dropped because Exeter have gone through. But if he does manage to keep this going, he has to get the top job, because with all those resources, he can think of a way to outfox other teams.
Well, it's not even that. I mean, I don't even know if the England job is suitable for him. I'd skip him, emperor of all rugby.
Yeah, I'm up for that. It's just under Steve Diamond.
Commissioner. Under Steve Diamond.
One very quick thing I mentioned either last week or the week before about the mark law. That I incorrectly said previously you could mark anywhere on the pitch. You could mark anywhere in your own half.
Really?
Previously.
Wow.
Oh, I'll tell you about mark.
Until, do you know when that got changed?
When?
1979.
Wow.
But that was at the point where you could mark anywhere in your own pitch, in your own half, and you could also kick directly into touch from anywhere. And there is one game between Scotland and Wales that had, it holds the record of the most lineouts in a single game. Bear in mind there are 80 minutes in a game. How many lineouts do you think there, what's the record for lineouts?
The record for lineouts, 41.
82.
111.
Wow.
Anyway.
So, just one last thing on marking. Talk H, our scrum was going so well in our loss to Aspel. We called for a scrum from a mark.
Yes. Yes. Did anyone do the Damien Willems of two fists together?
Of course I did. And then we won the penalty.
Yes. Right, back to the next week's fixtures.
Just run through them. I want any wins.
Exeter at home to Glasgow.
Good.
We've got... Only no 2-3-15s. Bristol host Bulls and Toulon host Munster. Munster and Toulon both need a win. Defeated in both games so far.
Should be fun.
Also, actually, sorry, Munster drawn one. We have 2 5 o'clocks, which is Leinster Stade Francais, and Sale travel to Cape Town.
I know this because I was speaking to Rob Dupree and the hairdressers on nice. Saturday morning.
So you live nearby.
Yeah, he lives just up the road.
Where'd he go? K-Swiss or... K-Swiss. That's the trainers.
It is. He goes to Black Sheep Barbers.
K-Cuts. Black Sheep Barbers. Oh, that's
so, it. I sat there and he walked in. All right, Rob.
To get his moustache sort of trimmed and shaped.
He's looking grand. So we had a good old chat about all sorts of things.
Then, well, he loves it because I bet he will never get spotted in South Manchester.
No.
Especially not in Chalton.
No.
And he's not even like one of the other Dupree boys walks in. Like, Rob Dupree is tall, but he's not like unusually large like Jean-Luc or Dan.
Yeah, we had a real good chat about different fitness of different players, who's doing well, who's not doing not well. It allowed me to have a proper nose.
Yeah.
Final games on Saturday. There's 2 8 o'clocks. Nobody will be watching Harlequin's bat at Cardiff. Dom Brandt going back to his old stomping ground. Mm-hmm. But everyone will be watching my beloved Ulster at home smash Toulouse, as we have done.
That's a great match.
In the past. And that's a repeat of the two-legged quarterfinal a couple of years ago. Ulster won away at Toulouse and then lost at home. That is the tie of Saturday, I think. And then on Sunday, we have 1 o'clock, Bath host Racing, which is in Pool 2. And... Bath are undefeated. Oh, right. Racing have not yet won a game, so yeah. Bath could win that.
That's huge.
La Rochelle host Leicester.
Big.
That is big.
Stuart Lancaster's first foray into Europe's going well, isn't it?
Mm. First foray with Racing 92.
Yeah,
he's top of the top 14. So okay. Yeah. Swings and roundabouts.
Yeah.
Well, we'll just see how it pans out, shall we?
if he signs fast, very well.
La Rochelle, so Leicester are undefeated. They're travelling to La Rochelle. La Rochelle have to win. They are currently 0-2. They are outside of... They would currently, if the music stopped right now, they would qualify for the Challenge Cup, which would be an utter disaster for La Rochelle.
No. It'd be an utter disaster for the Challenge Cup.
There'd be some silverware going to La Rochelle, but it would be a disaster for La Rochelle. And then the final game, 5:30, Saracens travel to my beloved Bordeaux, where they are going to get taken apart by an amazing scrum.
Who would you support if your beloved Ulster played your beloved Bordeaux?
Oh, I would be so conflicted. I would support Ulster in that scenario.
You've got years of supporting
Definitely.
Ulster.
I would don my ruined Pinar Ulster top or my incredibly tight large boys or small boys Ulster shorts and support Ulster unquestionably.
On that bombshell. Thank you very much. contactedchasers@gmail.com. I apologise, I haven't looked at the emails, and I'll get through some of those next week. And you can get more content at patreon.com/eggchasers. JB, you need to get to the airport.
Yeah, well, I'm going to make some tea first so they don't land until half eight.
Let the boys in.
Plenty of time, 15 minutes.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.